T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, let's go. The number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so, watching Jimmy Garoppolo stink up the joint tonight. My God, was he horrible. Horrible. Jimmy Garoppolo. Everybody loved Jimmy Garoppolo a couple of years ago. He sucks right now. He sucks. He better get it together. This is supposed to be a time you want your quarterback to go out there and perform at a high level. Jimmy Garoppolo was awful. Interception. Had another interception that should have been. It wasn't technically an interception. It was dropped. Looks like he's scared to take hits. He's throwing like fadeaway passes through for 0 yards tonight. That's difficult to do.
Is intercepted.
Yeah, thanks, Joe Tessitore. By the way, you ever read that story from The Ringer last year about Joe Tessitore, where like he went into this restaurant in New Jersey or New York, wherever he lives, and he was with Brian Curtis from The Ringer, I believe his name is. He's like their media reporter or whatever. And they went in there, and he's like, nah, just come this way. So they just walked through the kitchen, and he didn't take the menu. He just ordered, like, by himself. He didn't need the menu, and he was calling everybody by the first name. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. That does make total sense for Joe Tessitore. Anyway, I wanted to get to this. So how many threats do you think there are, legitimately are, to the Patriots in the AFC this year? 617-779-7937. So I'll do the exercise on the air like I was kind of doing the exercise with myself earlier today. Okay, so all right, let's start off in the East. The Dolphins, they're in a complete rebuild. Okay, so we can scratch them off the list. By the way, I was thinking about this as well. How about Brian Flores taking that job? I get it, he's one of 32, right? That's how the phrase goes. Well, there's only 32 jobs in the NFL. Yeah, but Brian Flores is only 38. And you look at this situation for the Miami Dolphins going forward, or rather, I should say, what he could have had with the Patriots, right? He's 38, and he knew that the Patriots defense going back next season was going to be elite, right? They showed signs last year towards the end of the season of being a great defense, especially against the Rams in the Super Bowl, right? And he was part of the game planning for that. Obviously, he was the defensive signal caller, even though Bill Belichick didn't officially give him the title of the defensive coordinator. So if I'm Brian Flores, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to get more opportunities, right? The NFL and the teams around the league were already sniffing for me this year. Okay, what do you think I'm going to do next year? There's going to be even more teams calling me because the Patriots, the story of their team this year is going to be the defense is absolutely stacked. So I don't know why he took that job. I get it. It's only one of 32. But consider the source, right? You're working for Stephen Ross. The guy's a nut job. And look at the history of the coaches there. Nick Saban, 2 years. He quit. Cam Cameron, 1 year. Tony Sperano got 4 years, by the way. Passed away a couple of years ago. Joe Philbin, 4 years. Adam Gase, 3 years. So they fire coaches left and right, not to mention the fact that they get rid of GMs left and right. They just had Mike Tannenbaum. He's gone. They had Jeff Ireland before that. Now they have Chris Greer, I believe, is running their team. But Stephen Ross, to use the Dennis Eckersley terminology, he fires guys just to stay in shape, right? He just does it to do it. So if you're Brian Flores, why would you take this job? It made no sense to me whatsoever. Outside of the old cliche, well, it's one of 32. Yeah, but he could get a better job moving forward than this one. But anyway, getting back to the original point, we're talking about how many threats are there legitimately to the Patriots in the AFC this year? We can cross the Dolphins off the list. I think we all agree on that. So then that brings me to the New York Jets. The Jets, they have no receivers. I like the quarterback. Darnold showed some signs last year. Even though the numbers weren't great, he showed some signs down the stretch of the season. I remember watching that Texans game on a Saturday afternoon. He played really well in that game. So he had a couple of nice signs last year. But does anybody really believe that the Jets are going to beat the Patriots next year? No, they're not a threat whatsoever. They're about a year or two away, and they hired Adam Gase. Adam Gase was not a good coach in Miami, and yet the Jets hired him. Like, that's the guy you go and hire. A guy that had already failed in the AFC East, you hire him to be your coach. It makes no sense whatsoever, but I guess it is the Jets. You also look at the fact that Mike Maccagnan was part of the hiring process for Adam Gase, and then they fired Mike Maccagnan, who hired the head coach. So you fired the guy that hired the head coach, not to mention the fact that Adam Gase apparently didn't want Le'Veon Bell or C.J. Mosley. So that's the coach running that organization, and also the fact that he's a nut job. Remember a couple of weeks ago, it was like a week and a half ago maybe, he was using smelling salts before the game as if he's a player. Dude, you're a coach. Why do you need smelling salts? You're the coach. Not to mention, he also was like, his wife was in labor a couple of years ago. This story came out about a month ago. His wife was in labor back in like 2013, 2012. And she had a C-section. And she's like, hey, honey, do you want to cut the umbilical cord? He said, no, I got to go. So he could go meet with Peyton Manning. He only sleeps 2 hours a night. Okay, this guy's going to run into the ground. Does Belichick ever look tired? He never looks tired. Adam Gase needs smelling salts on the sideline to stay awake. Okay, so the Jets are not a contender. The Bills, look, their quarterback's best weapon right now is his legs. It's not going to be a threat in the AFC. Although I do like some of the pieces they've added. The Bills, we can all acknowledge that they're not a legitimate threat in the AFC at this particular point in time. Not to mention, Josh Allen last year completed 55% of his passes. Call me crazy. I like my quarterbacks that can throw. The Browns, a lot of people are high on them. This thing has catastrophe written all over it. Baker Mayfield's an absolute lunatic. He's a loose cannon. You have Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry, and a rookie head coach. What could possibly go wrong? Not to mention, the Cleveland Browns have like no history, no recent history for sure, of success. Do we actually think that this team's got to work out this year with all the egos they have with a rookie head coach? No, this thing ain't working. The Bengals, next, they suck. How about the Steelers? They couldn't dethrone the Pats with Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, so they're going to beat you now. Sorry, I don't take the Steelers seriously going into next year, especially Mike Tomlin against Bill Belichick. What do you think is going to happen? Mike Tomlin can't figure out the Patriots from an offensive perspective. They have the same damn game plan every time they play the Patriots, and Brady rips them apart. And not to mention the fact, how about this whole Antonio Brown situation? I get he's no longer on the Steelers, but he's going up against the NFL again for the helmet. I thought we were done with this. But anyway, the Steelers aren't contenders. The Ravens. Now, the Ravens jersey always scares me, right? Because I think back to like 09, Ray Rice with that run to start the game. I think back to 2013 when Joe Flacco beat you. The Ravens always scare me just because I see the uniform. But Lamar Jackson can't throw. I mean, that's kind of an issue. When your quarterback can't throw the football, that's kind of an issue. Now, they've lost a good portion of their pass rush over the past couple of years, but they do have arguably the best secondary in the NFL. But I don't believe in their offense whatsoever. Greg Roman, basically what they're trying to do is the Colin Kaepernick offense from when the 49ers went to the Super Bowl. I don't believe Lamar Jackson's going to beat the Patriots in any sort of playoff game. So I've gone through the AFC East and I've gone through the AFC North, and I have nobody being a threat to the New England Patriots whatsoever because I don't believe in the Browns hype whatsoever. Baker Mayfield, by the way, this guy is going to get into issues with his receivers. He's too much for me. He's grabbing himself on the sideline. He does some weird. He's still mad at Hugh Jackson for leaving. Like, Baker Mayfield's not okay upstairs. He's getting in fights with Colin Cowherd all the time. Like, why do you care what he's saying? Why do you care? Is anybody else going after Colin Cowherd that's like a professional athlete? Move on, man. It's not that big of a deal. He had to go on a show to try to like defend himself. Just let your play do the defending. And his whole issue with Hugh Jackson, what is that about? He was mad that Hugh Jackson, after the Browns fired him, that he took a job with the Bengals. He thought that was like traitorish, if you will. How can he be a traitor? You guys fired him. Like, the Browns organization fired him. It wasn't like everybody's like, oh, we got to race to hire Hugh Jackson. When you're fired, you look for another job. That's how the world works. I never understood that. I don't believe in Baker Mayfield's personality. That's not going to work out. How about the Texans? Well, they have no offensive line. It sucked for 3 years. Bill O'Brien still can't fix it. By the way, Bill Belichick owns Bill O'Brien. I don't believe in them. And last year, remember 2 years ago, Deshaun Watson had like a coming out party against the Patriots. I'm talking about on the football field. The guy was absolutely tremendous. And then last year, 17 of 34 for 176 yards. He was horrible. He was horrible against the Patriots last year. And oh, by the way, Tom Brady has had some success against the Texans. So I don't believe in them. And plus, Deshaun Watson, he was awful in the postseason as well. And that offensive line is a real, real issue. And that was embarrassing at the draft. Remember, the Texans, everybody knew they needed an offensive tackle. So they had this kid lined up, Andre Dillard from Washington State, who the Eagles drafted. They jumped over them because the Texans were asleep at the wheel at the draft. So the guy they wanted, they couldn't get. They had to draft this kid. I believe his name was Titus Howard. It was like a complete reach. Had no first-round grades on him. The Texans are a poorly run organization. They have no chance. The Titans, their quarterback averaged 181 passing yards per game last year in Marcus Mariota. They're not a threat. Oh, well, they beat you 34-10 last year. Yeah, I don't believe in the Titans. Is anybody scared of the Titans? No. Jaguars, Doug Marrone's about to get fired. Nick Foles is not going to work out there. He's going to fail. I get that Nick Foles had that great performance in the Super Bowl, but let's be real when it comes to Nick Foles. He's never been a consistent quarterback throughout his career. Everything was set up perfectly for him in Philly. If you look at what was going on in Philadelphia, he had a great offensive line, not to mention the fact that he had great weapons. Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, et cetera. That team was absolutely loaded in Philadelphia. Well, what does he get in Jacksonville? A horrible offensive line. And who's his best receiver? Seriously. On the Jaguars, Marquise Lee?
D.D. Westbrook.
D.D. Westbrook, Nick? Is that who it is? I mean, really? That's like his best weapon. He's got no weapons. He's got no offensive line. Other than that, the Jaguars will be great from an offensive perspective. Not to mention Leonard Fournette, the guy can't stay in shape. All right, so they're not a threat. The Colts. Okay, this is kind of interesting to me. The Colts are kind of interesting to me. Now, Belichick has historically owned Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck, in fact, has never beaten the Patriots. And there's this issue with Andrew Luck. It's called his health. Do we actually know if Andrew Luck's going to be on the football field? That's the number one question with the Colts right now. They do not know. They're apparently going to give some sort of update as it pertains to Luck after the third preseason game. But at this point, we don't know if Andrew Luck's even going to be available on the football field for the Indianapolis Colts in the 2019 season. It's feeling very like 2017-ish to me, or 2018-ish, I should say. Remember they kept telling us, nothing to see here with the shoulder. No big deal. And then he didn't play. Okay, so that's what this is kind of feeling like to me. Now, the one thing I'd say about the Colts is, and I understand, look, Belichick has owned Andrew Luck. I understand that. But I still believe in Andrew Luck, the player, if he's actually healthy. That dude's a really good player. Last year, he was exceptional. Right, really after the pass, or after the first couple of weeks of the season, really the first month, he started to figure it out. So I believe Luck is that good, where he could at least provide a threat to the Patriots. But I just am worried about the health from Luck's perspective. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give them half a threat. So I'm going to consider them half a team because I don't know what's going to happen with Andrew Luck. So in the South, we got half a team. All right, let's go to the West. You got the Broncos. Joe Flacco's their quarterback, okay? He just lost out his starting job to Lamar Jackson. And by the way, can we address this? What is up with John Elway in terms of getting quarterbacks? Now, it's one thing to get Peyton Manning because everybody knew at that time he was already a four-time MVP. He was one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen play the sport. All he had to do was convince Peyton Manning to go to Denver over Tennessee because that was really the only two teams that were in the sweepstakes. Because San Francisco, where Peyton Manning went to visit when Jim Harbaugh was the coach, that was never really a serious priority for Peyton Manning because we all became aware of the fact that he didn't want to play in the NFC against Eli. So he was never going to go there. So all John Elway had to do was convince him to go to Denver over Tennessee. And that Tennessee Titans organization has been a disaster, right? And I believe at that particular point in time, wasn't like Ken Whisenhunt the coach? Like, and if John Elway can't recruit Peyton Manning to go to Denver over to go to Tennessee, I get he played football there in college and all that. But if you can't convince him, then that's on you. But think about John Elway ever since then. Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch. Last year, it's Case Keenum, Trevor Siemian. And now you're going after a guy that's damaged goods in Joe Flacco to save your organization, right? Like, maybe it's just the fact that John Elway did it at such a high level that he can't figure out who's good at quarterback, right? I don't know. Because ever since John Elway took over the Denver Broncos organization, he has missed on every single quarterback with the exception of Peyton Manning. And Peyton Manning wasn't like something he had to judge. That was a layup. But ever since then, he's been a mess. So we can all acknowledge the Broncos are not a threat. How about the Raiders? Well, Derek Carr is their quarterback. And if you watch Hard Knocks, the guy cares more about his arms than he does actually playing football. And he hasn't been good in years. I mean, 2016, he was okay. He was fine, but he had a perfect offensive line that ranked in the top five, according to Pro Football Focus that year, in rushing protection and in pass protection. Okay, run blocking and pass protection. And the offensive line has not been that since then. They have not had the same running game. And Derek Carr, the question with him coming out of Fresno State was happy feet. He continues to have happy feet, and he did last year. And now you look at this whole situation with Antonio Brown. Who knows when the hell the guy's going to be on the field? He's Looney Tunes. He's left the organization on multiple occasions because of his helmet. Not to mention the fact he's got frostbitten feet because he didn't put the proper footwear on when he went into a cryotherapy chamber. And their defense isn't good. There's that, too. Their defense sucks. Derek Carr's not good. So, yeah, the Raiders aren't a threat. Okay, so that brings us to the Chiefs. Okay, they're a legitimate threat. Okay, we can all acknowledge that they're a legitimate threat because of the fact that they have Pat Mahomes, who was the best player in the NFL a season ago. He threw 50 touchdown passes in his first year as an NFL starter. And the NFL allowed Tyreek Hill to come back. No suspension whatsoever. They have one of the best tight ends in the league in Travis Kelce. You have Sammy Watkins on the outside, which, yeah, he's never going to live up to that fourth overall pick and when the Bills traded up for him years ago. But if that dude's like your third option on offense, yeah, that's pretty good. Not to mention they drafted the kid Hardman out of Georgia, which is supposed to be like Tyreek Hill 2.0. And defensively, they can't be worse. Now, they fired their defensive coordinator, Bob Sutton. they bring in Steve Spagnuolo, and they go out there and they actually upgrade some of their defensive personnel. They get the honey badger, Tyrann Mathieu, over from the Texans. And Eric Berry was basically a sunk cost. He wasn't good anymore. He couldn't stay healthy, can't stay on the football field. And they got Frank Clark from Seattle, who's a decent pass rusher. There's no way that pass rush can't be better, or there's no way that defense, because they actually did get after the quarterback a little bit because they were up so much in games to the point where you had opportunities to sack quarterbacks. But nonetheless, that defense, it can't be worse than it was a year ago. And we saw what Pat Mahomes did against the Patriots last year, where the Patriots had that big halftime lead, and then Pat Mahomes, like, he couldn't figure out the Patriots in the first half. And correct me if I'm wrong, what did he put up, Nick? 31 points in the second half, right? 31 points. Okay, so he put up 31 points and a half against Bill Belichick. It's pretty damn impressive. So the reason I consider the Chiefs a serious threat, look at that offense. As great as the Patriots' defense is, you think they can slow them down? Yeah, maybe for a little bit, maybe for a quarter or two, but you're not going to completely keep Pat Mahomes at bay for the entirety of a game. So I have the Chiefs as a legitimate threat. Then I look at the Chargers. Now, the Chargers have all the talent, right? You think about it. Phillip Rivers quietly had one of the best seasons of his NFL career last year. But the reason he wasn't brought up in the MVP conversation is Pat Mahomes just went nuts. He threw 50 touchdown passes. But Rivers, from a statistical perspective, had arguably his best season last year. And you look at them from a defensive angle in this, Bosa's a stud, Ingram's a stud, Derwin James is a stud, but now he's hurt. Okay, Derwin James is dealing with a stress fracture in his foot. It seems like this happens every year with the Chargers. They pile up injuries, not to mention the fact they don't know what's going on with the Melvin Gordon situation. They offered him $10 million. Apparently, Melvin Gordon wants more than that. But if I'm a Chargers fan, I'm not really too concerned about that. I mean, they were actually a more efficient running team without him on the football field last year. So they'll be fine without that. They also get back Hunter Henry, who barely played last year. He played despite what Stephen A. Smith thought, and he thought he was going to be a big issue. But nonetheless, he barely played against the Patriots in that playoff game. Didn't play for the bulk of the season because he was coming off a torn ACL. But here's the reason. Like, on paper, the Chargers, I should consider them to be a legitimate threat against the Patriots. But the reason I don't consider them to be a legitimate threat, it's not because of the head coach. It's because of the defensive coordinator, Gus Bradley. That guy's an idiot. He was a failure in Jacksonville. He's dumb. He is legitimately dumb. If you think about last year, what the Chargers had was the same defensive scheme that the Seattle Seahawks had used for years, because Gus Bradley comes off the Pete Carroll tree, right? So it's the same defense. It's the same zone principles that they run there in Seattle. The problem was Gus Bradley was doing it with inferior personnel. Now, still pretty good personnel, but not like the Legion of Boom that won the Super Bowl in 2013. Is it Legion of Boom or Legion of Doom? I think it's Legion of Boom, right? Nonetheless, they had Sherman and Earl Thomas and Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril and Bobby Wagner, all those guys, right? The Chargers didn't have that same personnel. So they just signed, they lined up in the same look every time, and Brady's just like, really? Is this what we're doing here? And Brady just ripped him apart. The game was over at halftime. I get Phillip Rivers put up some numbers in the second half, but the game was over at halftime. And if you go back and you watch Inside the NFL that week, Bosa was saying, I can't get to Brady. He gets rid of the ball too quick. I'm paraphrasing what he's saying, but essentially that's what he said to Melvin Ingram. So I don't trust Gus Bradley to come up with a game plan that's going to be sufficient enough to slow down the Patriots' offense. This is what happens when you have dumb coaches and the Chargers have a dumb defensive coordinator. Like, if they had Rex Ryan as their defensive coordinator, I'd give them a chance, because remember, Rex has fooled Brady a couple of times, and now Rex is just doing TV. But nonetheless, remember what Rex Ryan used to do was that weird defense where, like, guys wouldn't be, like, the defensive line wouldn't be, like, standing up. They'd kind of be, like, wandering around, and Brady didn't know how to identify anything. How could you? You didn't know where the defenders were going to be, and they had elite personnel. The Chargers have elite personnel from a defensive perspective, but they got an idiot running the defense, right? So that's the problem. So when I go through this whole list, right, I come up with 1.5 teams that I actually consider to be legitimate threats to the Patriots in the AFC. That's the Chiefs, of course. We saw that game in the AFC title game. It was a tough one for the Patriots. Classic game, and maybe if the Chiefs win the coin toss, maybe they end up going to the Super Bowl. But nonetheless, the Patriots win the coin toss, they win the Super Bowl, the rest is history. So they're a legitimate threat. I give the Colts, like, half credit, because we don't know what's going to happen with Andrew Luck. And really, I don't even know how much of a threat I consider the Colts, because Bill Belichick owns Andrew Luck, and I don't expect that Colts defense, although it's improved a little bit, I don't expect that Colts defense to be able to slow down the Patriots. I guess another obstacle would be maybe the road. If they have to go on the road in the postseason, maybe that would be an obstacle for the Patriots. But that's the thing. When we look at this Patriots team, the AFC, there's just not many good teams. You look out in the NFC, the Eagles would be a threat. The Saints would be a threat. the Rams would be a threat, right? Even a team like the Vikings is decent, or, I mean, I don't really believe in Kirk Cousins, but you get the point. Green Bay, they have Aaron Rodgers, right? Atlanta's a good team again. You look at the NFC, it's completely stacked. The Patriots, now we know for years they've been living in this division that just sucks, coach after coach, quarterback after quarterback, right? But now, in totality, the AFC is not good anymore. The Steelers are significantly worse than they used to be. The Ravens are significantly worse than they used to be. So really, the only threats I see are the Chiefs and maybe the Colts. I don't believe in the Texans. The Chargers have Gus Bradley running their defense, so I don't believe in them whatsoever. That's where I stand on this. I don't see many threats to the Patriots whatsoever. I don't see much of a roadblock for them getting back to another Super Bowl, unless that game's in Arrowhead against the Chiefs. The number 617-779-7937, if you want to hop on board here. How many teams legitimately put fear into you as a Patriots fan as you enter the 2019 season? Plus, we'll get into the Josh Gordon situation as well. Brian Barrett with you on WEI. We'll get you trending in just a second here.
Is another line of questioning, or are we going to, or can a witness step down now?
Just curious.
All right, that was Bill Belichick today, is back and forth with the media after he was asked about Josh Gordon returning to the team. Basically said, hey, we're going to stick by the statement, which just says, for the past 8 months, this has been a league issue, and now we'll see and evaluate what Josh Gordon is essentially going to be with our team going forward. The number is 617-779-7937. All right, if you want to hop on board, weigh in on what you think of Josh Gordon now back with the Patriots, and also what do you think of the NFL's decision, because I want to start with that. So the NFL released a statement over the weekend, and Roger Goodell said this: we're all rooting for Josh to succeed, both personally and professionally. Everyone shares in that hope and will continue to support him in every extent possible. But as Josh acknowledged, ultimately his success is up to him. So the NFL is essentially saying, we want Josh Gordon to succeed. The league wants Josh Gordon to be sort of a success story that has turned his life around. And I really believe part of this is an optics situation with everything that's gone on, everything that has transpired with the NFL this offseason. So you look at this, the league doesn't suspend Tyreek Hill, and we knew what his past was, and he was involved in another incident this offseason with his son. Now, Tyreek Hill eventually was not suspended by the league, and the charges were eventually dropped, but there is still an audio tape where he tells his girlfriend, or his girlfriend says to him, our son is scared of you, and he says, you should be too, a word that rhymes with which. And also, there is some evidence that Tyreek Hill was basically, he would ask his son to hold his arms out, and he would punch him in the chest. There's also a very good chance, at least you can make an educated guess, that he broke his son's arm. It's just that authorities could not prove that he broke his son's arm. So there's that guy that didn't get suspended whatsoever. And then I also think about a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, a guy that has had a troubled past throughout his NFL career, going back to his days at college. And if you remember the video that came out, courtesy, I believe TMZ is the first one that had it, but remember, Ezekiel Elliott was facing a possible suspension for violating the conduct policy again. And remember, Ezekiel Elliott, he bumps a security guard. It's not like he punched him, but he bumped a security guard, was acting like a total idiot, and he ended up getting handcuffed. He was completely belligerent, just acting like a fool, right? Just, come on, man. Be better than that. But so you had these two issues, right? Ezekiel Elliott bumping a security guard at a concert or whatever that was in Vegas. And then you had the whole situation with Tyreek Hill. And the NFL doesn't suspend either one of those guys. And both those guys had issues in the past in terms of violating the conduct policy that has been provided by the NFL. And the Tyreek Hill thing is just jarring. I mean, if you listen to that audio tape, how the NFL didn't suspend him is just beyond me, because there weren't charges pressed. That's why they didn't do it. Just jarring, just shocking. And same thing with Ezekiel Elliott. After all that's transpired with him over the past couple of years, he's bumping a security guard in public. That does not look good for the league. It doesn't look good for the league. You have a guy out here who plays in your sport and he's bumping a security guard for no reason other than he's belligerent. That's why he did it, right? So the NFL didn't suspend either one of those guys. So now if you look at it from a perception standpoint, right, how does it look if they suspend Josh Gordon indefinitely or keep him suspended indefinitely and don't give him another opportunity? Because I understand that Josh Gordon has had countless opportunities. He's been suspended, it seems like, every year he's been in the NFL. But Josh Gordon, as we're now accepting or more accepting of these type of things in 2019, where What we're looking at with Josh Gordon is he has a real issue, right? He has an addiction issue. We've talked about this in the past. The reason he left the team last year was he was going to fail a test, or he had failed the test, but he also referenced the fact that he needed a mental break, right? He needed a mental break. So clearly he's acknowledged himself that he's had some issues from a mental capacity as well. So Josh Gordon is somebody that the NFL, it would look really bad if in the same offseason you didn't suspend Tyreek Hill, you didn't suspend Ezekiel Elliott, but you said Josh Gordon's going to be remaining suspended indefinitely for now using marijuana or something along those lines. It just, from a pure optic standpoint, it didn't look good. And I would also say this, even if you don't think that's that big of a deal, right, with the Ezekiel Elliott Tyreek Hill connection, how about the fact that now Roger Goodell, by doing this, can appear pro player, right? That's what Roger Goodell can look like. Oh, he's pro player. Because think about this statement that Roger Goodell puts out there. We want what is in the best interest of Josh. We want Josh to succeed, right? Basically supporting the player. And Roger Goodell is somebody that hasn't exactly gotten along with the players over the years, right? Everything that Roger Goodell has really done from a public relations standpoint has been a failure over the past whatever his tenure is as the NFL commissioner. Ray Rice situation, he botched that suspension, right? The suspension for Deflategate, complete joke from the league's perspective. How bad did that look? Not to mention Bountygate looked awful. They suspended Sean Payton for a year for that? Are you kidding me? A year for Sean Payton? Like, imagine that. Sean Payton lost a year of coaching because of Bountygate. Okay, so there's that. There's this Tyreek Hill situation. Looks awful for the league right now. And going back to the Ray Rice situation, remember originally they suspended him 2 games and then they tried to suspend him indefinitely after that. And they're like, well, Roger, that's you can't do that. You can't suspend him for the same penalty twice. You can't do that. So he looked like an idiot when it came to that. So everything that Roger Goodell does in terms of something that is meaningful for the league or something that's going to be a big decision for the league, it seems like he botches it. Every suspension, everything along those lines, Roger Goodell messes up. So what this does from a PR standpoint is this actually is a win for the league, right? Because what they're doing is they're putting their arm around a player. They're saying, hey, we want Josh to succeed. We want this to be the place where Josh Gordon flourishes as a human being, not just as a football player, but as a human being as well. We want Josh to be a success story for us. We want everybody to point, see, he had the NFL. He had an opportunity to grow as a player. He had an opportunity to grow as a person. And that's when he turned his life around, when Roger Goodell gave him another chance, when Roger Goodell gave him that other opportunity. I would say this, though, from a Patriots perspective, it is tough to depend on the guy because you've seen it at every turn. The guy continually gets suspended and gets suspended and gets suspended again. And clearly, Josh Gordon, this isn't just like because people want to make it out to be like, well, he was going to be suspended for marijuana use, whatever the case may be. But this is a guy that has a serious problem. He's acknowledging himself. He did a GQ article in 2017 where he acknowledged the fact that before games, he would take bong rips and he would take shots of Grand Marnier before games. So this is somebody that does have like a real legitimate problem as we're looking at Josh Gordon, right? He's acknowledged that fact. But you just never know how often Josh Gordon is actually going to remain on the football field. But with that being said, now when you look at the player, right, for the Patriots, this is really something that they needed. This is a real shot in the arm for this organization because if you look at it, the one thing I look at with Tom Brady is, and I've said this before, Tom Brady over the past 10 years or so, right, in this new version of the Patriots, this dynasty, he's always had three guys that he could reliably depend on. He had Gronk, he had Edelman, and he had Danny Amendola. Those guys were like his safety blanket, so to speak, and we've seen what they've all done. They've all had great postseason moments. Now, this is going to be the second year Amendola's not here, and again, you're not going to have Rob Gronkowski, of course, this year due to the retirement, although who knows, maybe Rob Gronkowski comes back at some point this season. I still think he's going to. At some point, he's going to come back. He's going to get sick and tired of sitting around with his brothers watching football on Sunday. He's going to say, yeah, I'm still pretty good at this football thing, and I'm only 29. Not to mention the fact, what other opportunities does he have? He's apparently some big announcements coming in a couple of weeks. What is he really going to do? What is he really going to do? That's my question. What's he going to do? He's going to be on like Dancing with the Stars or something? Great. He's going to get sick of that, and eventually he's going to want to come back to football. And I just hope that he doesn't wait too late and he becomes Tiki Barber. Remember, Tiki Barber waited like 5 years, and he realized he wasn't going to have the post-football career that he thought he was going to have, Michael Strahan ended up having that career. I hope Gronk doesn't do that. Like, I just hope he doesn't wait too long. I still think he's going to come back this year. I really do truly believe that. He's putting out all the hints. And if he does keep putting out these hints and he doesn't come back, I'm going to be really pissed off. Because I went through it last week. There's six times this year that he's given us hints that he's going to return to the football field. He better come back, because this is starting to piss me off, all this crap with Gronk. But nonetheless, getting back to my original point, getting away from my digression, he's had the three guys he can depend on. And this year, going into this season, the only guy that he could depend on from a chemistry, from a football standpoint, was Julian Edelman. Because you can be high on N'Keal Harry, you can be high on Jacoby Myers, but he has no previous experience with those guys. Even a guy like Benjamin Watson, Brady played with that guy like a decade ago, not to mention the fact he's suspended for the first four games of the season. Now, I understand James White of the backfield, but I'm talking about receivers and I'm talking about tight ends. At least what we know from a football standpoint, and I know this is going to sound crazy to associate Josh Gordon with this, but he does provide some familiarity and, more importantly, some security for Tom Brady. Because remember, Josh Gordon, before the suspension last year and before he took the mental health break, he was averaging 18 yards per reception. That was second in the NFL to only DeSean Jackson, who is like a legitimate deep threat. And Josh Gordon did more than that. Josh Gordon can go over the middle. He can do all this different type of stuff. Josh Gordon, remember, he was leading the Patriots in receiving yards before he ended up leaving the team. So Brady had built up a chemistry with Josh Gordon. And if you look at him from a pure physical standpoint, Josh Gordon is the most gifted wide receiver that Tom Brady's played with since Randy Moss. I'm not putting him in the Randy Moss category, but if you look at him, 6'3", goes about 225 pounds. He's a freak. And we saw, for the first time really since Randy Moss, Brady just throwing the ball up in the air. Like, now with Brandon Cooks, Brady would throw the ball down the field, but that's because Brandon Cooks had left his defender in the dust, right? It wasn't like a jump ball situation, because he's diminutive in stature. He's about 5'10", 5'11". When you look at Josh Gordon, Brady felt like, I'm just going to throw the ball up to this guy. Remember when Brady threw, what was it, his 500th touchdown pass last year? He just skied it up to Josh Gordon. Gordon's like, yeah, I'll go get it. So from a pure football standpoint, it brings some security. And the other thing it does is, when you look at a guy like N'Keal Harry, first of all, he's had trouble staying healthy in training camp. Had to leave the second preseason, or rather the first preseason game, with that hamstring injury. He was dealing with another soft tissue injury. So this is a guy that's been banged up throughout the bulk of preseason and has missed a preseason game because of it. But also the fact that it's a lot of pressure that this team is putting on N'Keal Harry to be like the other receiver outside of Julian Edelman, because they're going to need somebody on the outside. So at least Josh Gordon fills a void there for the time being. And once N'Keal Harry gets caught up to speed, maybe it's going to take a year or two, then you're comfortable with that transition. But were you really going to be comfortable with N'Keal Harry heading into this season as a rookie wide receiver who has no history with Tom Brady whatsoever, right? I mean, Malcolm Mitchell, a couple of years ago, he built some chemistry up with Tom Brady, but that was kind of like the cherry on top of the sundae, because you had Gronk, you had Edelman, you had Amendola, you had all those guys, right? I guess technically he didn't have Gronk because he didn't play in that Super Bowl, but you had Amendola and you had Edelman, and he developed late in the season, which was like a surprise for the Patriots. But with N'Keal Harry, you were asking him to essentially be your number two wide receiver entering the season, and now you have that guy in Josh Gordon. So what it does is it gives N'Keal Harry some time to develop as a player. And what it also does is, if Josh Gordon does have another issue, an off-the-field issue, well, then they can make that transition from Josh Gordon to N'Keal Harry after he's had some experience in the system, some time in the system, some time to develop with Tom Brady. All right, a lot more to get into. The number is 617-779-7937. You're not going to believe the latest news with Antonio Brown. Thank God he's not on the Patriots. We'll get into that. Brian Barrett with you on WEI.
So here's the bottom line. He's upset about the helmet issue. We have supported that. We appreciate that. Okay, but we've, at this point, we've pretty much exhausted all avenues of relief. So from our perspective, it's time for him to be all in or all out. Okay, so we're hoping he's back soon. We got 89 guys busting their tails. We are really excited about where this franchise is going. And we hope AB is going to be a big part of it starting week one against Denver. End of story. No questions.
All right. That's Mike Mayock talking about Antonio Brown. I can't believe this is a story. I really can't. Brian Barrett with you in the number 617-779-7937.
End of story. No questions.
First of all, I thought it was going to be, the first time I thought it was ridiculous, right? The guy's complaining over a helmet situation when Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers are dealing with the same situation where they basically got a one-year grace period and then they had to basically change helmets because the helmet model they were wearing was more than 10 years old and basically they found other models that were more safe. And, of course, this is a league that was sued by its former players. So, naturally, if there's something that's going to help the safety of the players, the league at this particular point is going to side on that side of things. But nonetheless, I thought it was ridiculous to begin with that Antonio Brown was filing a grievance against the NFL for not allowing him to wear his old helmet. And then he's out there in practice. He's spray painting his helmet. He's got his old Steelers helmet. He's spray painting it silver. It's like, Antonio, you can't do that, man. And anyway, like, he puts the team itself in trouble, right? Because if the team lets him out there, they get in trouble. They're liable for him going out there. They can get in trouble for him wearing the old school helmet or his old helmet. And think about it, if you're a Raiders organization right now, if you're a member of that Raiders organization, that's the way I should put it. Like, if you're Mike Mayock and you heard him right there, how pissed he is. I mean, he's so mad. He's the helmet situation. We've exhausted every avenue. We've tried to get him a new helmet. It's not working. Now he's filing another grievance. I'm not kidding.
All in, we're all out.
Exactly. He's filing another grievance against the NFL. Another one. He filed one. He went missing yesterday. Apparently he's back at practice, but he's filing another grievance. You got his agent, the power agent in the NFL, Drew Rosenhaus, doing television issues, talking about this helmet issue. It's unbelievable. It really is. Okay, so anyway, I just think about it from the Raiders' perspective and all this. They traded for this guy, and they gave up a third and a fifth round pick. And I said at the time, when they traded away a third and a fifth round pick, I was like, whoa, that's all they had to give up for Antonio Brown? I'm like, he's one of the best five receivers in the NFL. Now, it's odd the Raiders were doing it. Now, I guess he fits the persona of the Raiders. Like, he's the perfect Raider. He's got his diva, drama. Like, he fits them from that perspective. But, like, in terms of where they're at right now, I thought the Raiders were in rebuild mode, but apparently they're trying to have a final nice season in Oakland. You're going to suck anyway. Derek Carr's your quarterback. But nonetheless, it was weird that the Raiders were the team, but I was like, a third and a fifth? That's all they have to give up for one of the best three receivers in the NFL? Because we just saw Odell Beckham Jr., and I get Odell's younger, but Odell Beckham Jr. went for a first-round draft pick, so I'm like, a third and a fifth for Antonio Brown? Man, that's not too much at all. But then you're realizing, like, maybe it wasn't worth it. So they also gave this guy $30 million in guaranteed money, and they gave him a three-year extension, or at least a two-year extension, and because he was signed for one more year in Pittsburgh. 3 years, $50 million. They also increased his pay bump, too, in terms of his average annual salary. He's now making $16.7 million per season. And you're talking about a guy that you don't know if he's going to show up on a day-to-day basis because he's upset with the helmet situation. Like, I could almost give him the benefit of the doubt with the foot issue, right? Because it's like, all right, whatever. He's trying to recover. He's a crazy workout guy, right? So it's like, all right, he's trying to recover. He just didn't put up the proper footwear. But now I can't give him the benefit of the doubt with the foot thing. I'm just like, this guy's crazy. He's got no idea what's going on. Remember, this is the same Antonio Brown. I guess we should have known by what was going on in Pittsburgh. He wasn't available for his team in week 17 of the regular season last year. Remember, this is a game that the Steelers had to win to stay in contention for the playoff race. Now, eventually, it didn't matter anyway because Baltimore beat Cleveland in week 17, so Baltimore got that final playoff spot. But the Steelers needed to win in week 17 because if they won and the Steelers or if the Ravens lost, they would have got into the postseason. Antonio Brown didn't play in that game in week 17 because he was suspended from the team because Antonio Brown went AWOL. The guy just went missing. He wasn't at practice for the whole week. They didn't know where Antonio Brown was. He just went missing. It's like the Derrick Rose situation years ago when he was playing for the New York Knicks. They're just like, where the hell's Derrick? They're sitting there at practice. Where the hell is Antonio Brown? They had no idea where the guy was. And if you remember back to the AFC Championship game, what year was that? Was it 2016? 2016 or 2016, right? Because that's the year the Patriots beat Atlanta. Yeah, it was 2016. So in 2016, the Patriots played the Steelers in the AFC title game. They killed them. They absolutely crushed them. But nonetheless, I say that to say this. At the beginning of the game, they scored a touchdown on a rushing play, Le'Veon Bell. And Antonio Brown was upset on the sideline. He was mad at Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger, etc. You know why? Because they didn't throw him the ball. We're talking about the AFC Championship game. You win this game, you go to the Super Bowl. Antonio Brown was mad with the Steelers from a play calling standpoint because they didn't throw him the ball in the red zone. And let me remind you, not like Ben threw an interception or they fumbled the ball and the other team recovered. The Patriots in this case would be the other team. No. They just didn't throw it to him. They scored a touchdown, but they didn't throw it to him. So, man, the Raiders really have a situation on their hands. We're going to get Hard Knocks later on, I guess tonight at this particular point in time. I want to see how they address this because last time they didn't really address it. HBO, we know, is in bed with the NFL. But I have to imagine the Raiders themselves would like to see HBO put Antonio Brown on blast right now. Because you can tell by the way Mike Mayock's talking, and I imagine John Gruden feels the same way at this point in time. They got to be just fed up with this guy. Listen, we gave you an opportunity to get out of Pittsburgh. We gave you $50 million. We guaranteed you $30 million. And you can't even show up to the facility. And then when you do show up, you just leave because you're upset with a helmet situation. Get it together,
man. Bottom line.
Yeah, that's a team the Patriots are competing with in the AFC. Yeah, they should put up a real fight. Thanks to Nick for producing. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.